person because his or her father is a Daesh member. It's not religious, it's not humane. So one of my priorities in the PMU is to bring back the displaced families to their hometowns. This is our religious duty, and we shouldn't underestimate it.
Has it ever occurred to you to feel afraid of something?
Yes, I fear reporters. You?
Apart from us?
My wife.
How many children do you have? You didn't say that.
Should I say everything? I have four daughters. One of them has a PhD in international relations. Another has an MA in architecture. The other has an MA in chemistry. And the last one is still studying.
Abu Mahdi has been fighting for years, overtly and covertly. This is enough to portray a middle-aged guerrilla who is these days the pioneer in the fight against Takfiris. But Abu Mahdi is a real teacher. If there was no war, he would definitely be teaching at university, reviewing the formulas of development with his students. But duty is calling on him to take on a different job. Months of precise planning in the war room came to fruition, despite acts of sabotage by the U.S. Battalions from the resistance front managed to liberate Fallujah with the least casualties, thanks to the participation of all Shia and Sunni tribes. Fallujah was a nightmare for the Americans years ago.
Have you written any memoir?
I have some notes, but I haven't put them down as a memoir.
If you plan to write your memoir, what will you name the book?
Abu Mahdi.
Shall we name it the film Abu Mahdi as well?
Yes, I think.
Where would you like to be laid to rest if you got martyred?
I haven't talked about this with anyone except for one person, and I have asked him to contact my family in case I die or get martyred, and ask them about their favorite burial site. I prefer the cemetery of the martyrs because I like to be close to martyrs, and I believe it's a great opportunity for those who are buried near martyrs Muhammad Ali Rajai and Ayatollah Beheshti, two prominent Iranian politicians killed in terror attacks.
What will you do after the demise of Daesh?
I keep on fighting. It should go on till the end of my life. Jihad is a door God has opened only to its special servants. This is what Imam Ali says. It's a golden opportunity. I hope jihad would stay and I would remain to do it.
What would you like to say to the Iranians?
It was a blessing for them that they had Imam Khomeini. They're very lucky to have a leader like Ayatollah Khamenei. Hope God would give him longevity until Imam Mahdi comes back. An old iron bridge that Daesh exploded. We were engaged in fierce fighting with Daesh operatives. We put up a fierce resistance. Then we changed our plan. Instead of going from south to north, that is, instead of going from the Konkeri bridge inside which we were stationed, we started to encircle the terrorists. We moved forward from east to west toward this bridge. Then we took control of Azraghiya. Thank God the area was completely liberated after we took this bridge and the next one. Daesh terrorists fled from Fallujah by swimming.
In the limelight.
U.S. Representative Louie Gohmert became the latest Republican to file a long-shot lawsuit attempting to reverse President-elect Joe Biden's victory, this time by suing Vice President Mike Pence. The last-ditch legal effort filed recently came from Louie Gohmert, an eight-term congressman from Texas, along with 11 Arizona residents who had been nominated by the state's Republican Party to serve as electors. It comes over a week before Mike Pence is scheduled to preside over a joint session of Congress where the Electoral College votes for Joe Biden and President Donald Trump will be tallied up. Electors had already cast their votes 2 weeks earlier. Joe Biden received 306 electoral votes, 36 more than he needed to win, whilst Donald Trump received 232. The lawsuit asked federal judge Jeremy Kernodle, a Trump appointee in eastern Texas, to declare that Mike Pence has the exclusive authority and sole discretion to decide which electoral votes from a given state should be counted. While pro-Trump electors in some states, Biden won, have symbolically cast their own ballots, experts say those votes carry no legal weight. The Republican complaint claims that part of the 1887 Electoral Count Act should be declared unconstitutional as it clashes with the 12th Amendment. The lawsuit claims that amendment contains the exclusive dispute resolution mechanisms, including that Vice President Mike Pence determines which slate of electors' votes count, or neither, for that state. Legal scholars quickly dismissed the Republican lawsuit as hopelessly far-fetched. We're prepared for you an article written by Michael D'Antonio, the author of the book Never Enough, Donald Trump and the Pursuit of Success, and co-author with Peter Eisner of the book High Crimes, the Corruption, Impunity and Impeachment of Donald Trump. The piece is titled The Humiliation of Mike Pence. Please stay with us for more of Michael D'Antonio's article. The four-year humiliation of U.S. Vice President Mike Pence is reaching a crescendo. One-term President Donald Trump, who lost the 2020 election to Joe Biden by over 7 million votes, is reportedly pressuring Mike Pence to take steps to overturn the will of the people. He seems to think the Vice President could perform his duty when Congress meets to certify the results on 6th of January. Fortunately, the U.S. Constitution offers Mike Pence no way to stop the process as he presides over the joint session of the House of Representatives and the Senate next week, a process that Joe Biden presided over 4 years ago when Donald Trump's victory was certified. Nevertheless, Mike Pence could aid Republicans as they deliver speeches that will delay the outcome and add to the sense among Trump loyalists that he was cheated out of re-election. In doing so, Mike Pence could stake his claim to the Trump legacy and get a boost for his own political future. Thus, his seemingly absolute commitment to the president could finally be rewarded. To be fair, Mike Pence's tenure as vice president has looked like a continuous show of servility. When he wasn't offering over-the-top praise to Trump and his policy choices, he stood at his side beaming, with a kind of adoring expression that recalled Nancy Reagan's appreciative look towards her husband, former President Ronald Reagan. It is worth remembering that Mike Pence was offered the vice president job in part because of his appeal to vast numbers of evangelical voters who will be reassured by his presence alongside the profane, thrice-married Donald Trump. However, the sycophant's role would have been part of the deal for anyone who agreed to join the ticket. Always the center of attention, Donald Trump would never make room in the spotlight for anyone else. Mike Pence accepted and kept his commitment. His loyalty tested and unbroken, Pence's fate was sealed. Trump's defeat should have signaled that Pence's reward, his own rise as the GOP's leading 2024 presidential candidate, was at hand. Instead, he's had to suffer a bit longer as the press reports that the president is angry with him for failing to work harder at overturning the election. According to the political news website Axios, Donald Trump was angered when the Lincoln Project posted a video saying Mike Pence was abandoning him. Viewed by 1.3 million people, it begins with the words, "The end is coming, Donald. Even Mike Pence knows it." The video ends with the message, "On 6th of January, Mike Pence will put the nail in your political coffin when he presides over the Senate vote to prove Joe Biden won. It's over, and Mike Pence knows it." Having served 12 years in Congress and 4 years as governor of Indiana, Mike Pence surely knows how the electoral process works, and that he and Donald Trump lost to Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. Furthermore, 4 years as vice president has surely taught him that in the president's reality, what matters now is who will join him in the bizarre effort to overturn the election result. Despite the Lincoln Project advertisement, Mike Pence has still taken steps to show his commitment to Donald Trump. Recently, Pence jetted to West Palm Beach in Florida, where he promised a crowd of conservative youth that, "We're going to keep fighting until every legal vote is counted. We're going to keep fighting until every illegal vote is thrown out." He also urged the young voters to stay in the fight against election fraud. As he pledged himself to the president's baseless cause and declared there was a battle to be won over election integrity, Mike Pence showed himself to be roughly Trump's equal when it comes to their interpretations about the country's controversial voting system. Despite claims, many from Republicans, of election fraud, they couldn't present any evidence, and their effort to prove that it exists in any pervasive sense have failed. Although Donald Trump's commission on the subject failed to find evidence of meaningful fraud and disbanded a year after being formed, this reality check has not removed the issue from the GOP agenda. Republicans, especially Donald Trump, kept selling the fraud claim, and some people have bought into it because they think this controversial election system, everything is possible. Before the election, the Pew Research Center found that 43% of Republicans and 25% of all those surveyed believe voter fraud to be a real problem when people voted by mail. According to an NPR PBS NewsHour Marist opinion poll, post-election, only one quarter of Republicans say they trust the election results. With opinion polls showing the cries of fraud have worked, Mike Pence continued peddling the narrative, which only proved that he's as willing as Donald Trump to perpetuate a claim, at least where it might also serve his political end. It also shows how much he values Donald Trump's so-called loyal base, which, if measured by the votes cast in November, numbers more than 74 million. According to the website Politico, although Donald Trump has said he's considering a run in the 2024 presidential election, he's also said he might back away from this idea. This would make Mike Pence a front-runner for the next Republican ticket. Under these circumstances, now is not the time for him to break the bond. A man who regularly declares his faith, Mike Pence is hardly the type to become a political apostate, not with the paradise of the presidency in sight. Pence's dogged commitment to his wingman role may please certain Trump voters, but it doesn't mean the nomination or the White House will be his for the taking. Just consider the campaign banner displayed 2 months ago at an event in Nevada. What did it say? Don Jr. 2024. U.S. Representative Louie Gohmert became the latest Republican to file a long-shot lawsuit attempting to reverse President-elect Joe Biden's victory, this time by suing Vice President Mike Pence. The last-ditch legal effort, filed recently, came from Louie Gohmert, an 8-term congressman from Texas, along with 11 Arizona residents who had been nominated by the state's Republican Party to serve as electors. Mike Pence is scheduled to preside over the joint session of Congress, and the Electoral College votes for Joe Biden and President Donald Trump will be tallied up. Electors had already cast their votes 2 weeks earlier. Joe Biden received 306 electoral votes, 36 more than he needed to win, whilst Donald Trump received just 232. The lawsuit asked federal judge Jeremy Knoddle, a Trump appointee in eastern Texas, to declare that Mike Pence has the exclusive authority and sole discretion to decide which electoral votes from a given state should be counted. While pro-Trump electors in some states, Joe Biden won, have symbolically cast their own ballots, experts say those votes carry no legal weight. The Republican complaint claims that part of the 1887 Electoral Count Act should be declared unconstitutional, as it clashes with the 12th Amendment. The lawsuit claims that amendment contains the exclusive dispute resolution mechanism, including that Vice President Mike Pence determines which state of electors' votes count or neither for that state. Legal scholars quickly dismissed the Republican lawsuit as hopelessly far-fetched. Election law expert Rick Hansen of the University of California at Irvine tweeted, "No, this won't work." Joshua Geltzer, executive director of Georgetown University's Institute for Constitutional Advocacy and Protection, wrote, "The lawsuit will go nowhere." Georgia State University law professor Anthony Michael Crace tweeted, "This is insane." Spokespeople for Mike Pence's office did not immediately respond to CNBC's request for comment. Some House Republicans have stated they will challenge the election results when Congress meets to count the Electoral College votes on 6th of January. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky, has reportedly urged his caucus not to make similar objections. Any objections to the electoral votes must be submitted in writing and signed by at least one House of Representatives and one Senate member. If an objection arises, the two chambers consider the objection separately. The Trump campaign and several of the president's allies have launched dozens of attempts to challenge the election result in numerous swing states. None of those legal efforts has succeeded in invalidating votes for Joe Biden or flipping the result of any state's presidential elections. The U.S. Supreme Court earlier in December rejected a bid from Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton to sue four key swing states over changes they made to voting procedures. Donald Trump had called that lawsuit the big one.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Thank you. In the name of Allah. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. Stay tuned.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English. This is Viewpoints. Here in the studio today, we have with us Sayyid Mahdi. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
Yeah. And Sheikh Ali. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam
wa rahmatullah. So the world has changed, and it's not going to change back again after the shahadat of General Qasim Soleimani. And that's what we're going to be discussing today, particularly about the international coverage of the funeral. And I'd like to take Sayyid Mehdi's viewpoint into consideration as we begin the discussion. So what are your immediate reactions to the kind of the international coverage of the funeral?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. I think there's two aspects here to the international coverage, right? One is the international... Assuming you're talking about media coverage.
Right, yeah.
The international media coverage as regards to the West and the censorship and, of course, the misinformation and misguidance which was being done and is still being done on a very large scale is one side of the story. But the other side of the story is the international media coverage that was done by sources who are not subjugated or who are not the servants of the Western agenda. So, you know, and I guess in the eastern part of the world, you saw that there was a lot of media coverage on this assassination, on this martyrdom of Haj Qasim Soleimani. What was interesting was that the mourning that was conducted for Shahid Qasim Soleimani was really something that was unseen for a long time.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything like that.
I think the closest thing that would come would be the funeral of Imam Khomeini.
Right, I've seen people making that comparison between this and the funeral of Imam Khomeini. Am I mistaken to say that that was the biggest funeral in history?
If you look at the history and history of Iran, especially. Imam Khomeini's funeral was so big and so huge and so populated that nobody could even come close to that sort of a funeral after Imam Khomeini passed away. The world, and especially Iran, has seen, after all these years, after like 30-plus years, the biggest funeral after that of Imam Khomeini's, and that was General Qasim Soleimani, who was not the Wali of Faqih, of course. He was not, you know, somebody who went to the Hawza, for instance, and was a very senior Islamic scholar. He was just a general, right? But there was something special about him that it pulled the hearts towards the streets, and people came out mourning and expressing their anger, more importantly, against America.
Yeah, I mean, considering that the population of Iran has pretty much doubled since the time of Imam Khomeini, people are even saying that this funeral, in terms of numbers, was even bigger.
Probably, yeah. I wouldn't refute that. Mm-hmm. I don't have the statistics, but I would say that that's pretty precise. Streets were filled, even like huge roads, like five lanes, where normally the cars would drive in parallel. They were packed, jam-packed for kilometers. And this is not just one city.
Video is that aerial view. I think it's off Tehran, where you can see these people, and they do look like ants. And it just goes on and on and on. Sayyid Mehdi actually mentioned that it's like Arba'in. All over again. Exactly. It was fascinating.
Yeah, you could feel it, you know. It was people, they wanted to make sure that they expressed themselves. That this heinous crime that America had committed, and the sacrifices of a person like General Qasim Soleimani, a person of his stature, a person of his spirituality, a person of his military skills, a person who is a strategic and at the same time a very wise person who knows when to make a move, right? He was not just all out in the battlefield, you know, just shooting and, you know, fighting. No, he knew when to make a move. You know, a person of his stature and experience, people wanted to make sure that they give and send out a very clear message to the entire world, let it be the world governments or, you know, just the average people, that he was loved in Iran. He was loved not just in Iran, even beyond Iran's borders, and we're going to talk further about it, how, you know, other countries and cities played into it.
Another interesting thing, though, what you find here is you see, again, you know, as Sheikh Ali was saying, that millions really mourned for this individual, for this great personality of Islam. And, you know, for example, we saw specifically in the city of Qom, we saw that it wasn't just Iranians who came out to mourn him, but it was people from all nations. I mean, you saw people from Pakistan, Afghanistan, you saw Iraqis, right? From Bangladesh. I mean, you name it.
Chinese were there.
Chinese people Westerners were there.
Yeah. So black brothers, white brothers.
It was very amazing to witness this.
Myself.
This international mourning for an individual. And to be honest with you, I think that perhaps in Qasem Soleimani's own mind, he probably didn't imagine that this international level of humanity will come to mourn him.
Subhanallah. Right? Yeah.
I mean, if I can just chime in, you know, people like him, they're not really concerned.
They're not. Yeah.
To them, it doesn't matter because they're so godly people. Their focus is God only.
Right.
And this is where we have traditions, Islamic traditions, which say that if you love Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Allah plants your love in the hearts of people. And this is exactly what we witnessed.
Right.
You know, these people didn't even know his language, many of them.
Yeah.
If you look at other countries, how they protested, candlelight vigils. I know it happened in Canada. It happened in UK. Multiple cities of U.S. and Australia, Germany. You know, it was a very weird phenomena, and I think we never expected it.
No, it was very surreal, right?
When we went
to see this, it was really surreal because it was men, there was women, there was children, there was old people. I mean, it was amazing. People brought their. I personally saw a family who had brought a newborn. Right? I mean, the kid must have not, it was a baby, not more than 6 months old, right?
Yeah.
They brought them, and they came in the millions, and not just the people. If you look, all political factions came from all across the political scenario, again, various nations. And even when you look at, for example, international personalities that gave their condolences, for example, you have Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, of Hezbollah in Lebanon, you know, Haji Qasem Soleimani, he was very close to Sayyid Nasrullah. And you can see in some of the speeches of Sayyid Nasrullah that he was really hurt. You know, he was saddened by this. Just as the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Sayyid Ali Khamenei, if you're able to access the video of him leading the funeral rites, the prayer of Qasem Soleimani, you'll see that he's crying, right? It was amazing. You saw that all these people cried for this great personality.
Okay, now we know that it was definitely surreal, and I like that word because I remember it was feeling like a dream. It was strange. It was like, whoa, is this really happening? Could there possibly be this many people? When I was upset on the morning that I found out, and you go out into the streets and you see people crying on the streets in groups.
And they're wearing black.
And they're wearing black, and, you know, some they weren't.
It's very symbolic in Iran, right?
I mean,
when you wear black, it's like.
Okay, so now the enemy, on the other hand, because we're talking about the coverage, right, the international coverage. Would you say, in your opinion, that considering the magnitude of this event as it occurred, did the mainstream media give it due justice or not?
Well, that's for sure, and it's not just us here who are realizing that. I'm in touch with many activists from throughout the world, from the East and from the West. The mainstream media, of course, they did a huge injustice by misrepresenting who General Qasem Soleimani was. They had a very strict agenda of making sure that they bring a bad name and bad coverage to Iran and the Islamic Revolution and the system of Wilayatul Faqih. And, you know, they're the enemies, so what do you expect? At the same time, one, at least in the past, used to have hope when it came to social media. That, okay, it had some sort of a liberty where you can go to, like, maybe an extra step where you can get the truth and justice and the word of haq and truth out there. But unfortunately, this particular event, I've noticed very closely that the social media even, they made sure that they suppress any voice of support of General Qasem Soleimani, any right. voice of support for Iran, for the Islamic resistance, or even the resistance forces and the factions around the globe.
Right.
Right? So they went as far as that if you were to post a picture of Qasem Soleimani, this great martyr, this shaheed, who actually fought ISIS, who fought terrorism in this region, they would delete your profile. This is how far they went.
So much
for freedom of speech and expression, right?
Right.
You're not allowed to express your own sentiments.
Mint Press News actually reported that Silicon Valley giant Facebook announced that it would be deleting all positive posts about assassinated Iranian general.
Up until that point, they were unofficially doing that. You know, they were just doing it from their back room. But then it got to a level that it just got out of control.
Yeah.
The people, the general masses, average social media users, and if you are on social media, you would say, like, people have changed their display pictures on their WhatsApp.
Yeah.
People who are not even Iranians.
If you haven't done it, right. you should do it.
Right? Now, this all of it was actually getting out of control, so it pushed them so far back that they had to come out clean, and they said, okay, we're going to put the foot down because social media is what we own. We're going to make sure that anybody who puts out... So it's basically a threat to the general masses.
Right.
That if you put a picture of General Qasem Soleimani, even if it's a picture where he's smiling, we're not talking about guns and we're not talking about all that.
Yeah.
They said that we're going to delete it. So they are actually threatening people. And they ended up deleting the profiles.
I mean,
and countless profiles, not just people who are Shias or Sunnis or Muslims, even the non-Muslims who were voicing their support for General Qasem Soleimani and against America, the injustice that America has done, the oppression that it is continuing to do, they're deleting their profiles.
I think what an interesting point here, for example, is that for people who believe that the media is free and open in the West, I think this is a very clear signal to everyone that without a doubt, there is no liberty of speech in the West. There is no free media in the West. Even, you know, as Sheikh Ali said, that we thought that social media platforms would give you an amount of freedom. By these recent actions, we have seen, no, that truly, even these social media platforms and the news is in the control of certain factions who don't want the truth to come out for the people.
Yeah, I mean, we also, yeah, I just wanted to point out that, let's take this in a positive spin, these guys are actually threatened by
well,
us.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It used to be like that, as right. Sayyid Mahdi mentioned, you know, there was a certain level of extended freedom, you know, for people to express their views, and that was the primary philosophy behind social media, mm-hmm. that you
and
contribute.
Popularity.
You get to say your... You have a say. You get to express yourself, right?
YouTube.
However you want to, right? Mm. But they're actually tightening it up. And you know what the reason is? The reason is they have lost the battle.
Right.
They thought that they're going to be able to give this perceived freedom to the people. Huh. And as a result of this, people are going to be like, oh, wow, West is so open about everything. Well, guess what? People started to speak their mind, and now all of these social media platforms, the mainstream ones owned by CIA or, you know, the Western Zionist media
right.
empire,
right.
They're threatened now that they can't face this flood of people online. They can't fight back. So what do? They just, you know, silence them by deleting their profiles and pages.
Right. And yet, despite all of this, I'd just like to point out, they have not been able to suppress the spirit of the people.
Right, and this is where, if you notice, you know, throughout the world right now, after the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani, the profile pictures tell you, everybody is saying, we are Soleimani, I am Soleimani, I am able to and ready to retaliate against America's oppression, the Zionist regime, the Wahhabi Takfiri agenda in the region. You know, people are expressing these views through their just profile pictures. You don't speak words. You go look at their status even on WhatsApp, right, or other social media platform. You would get this very loud and clear message that we are Soleimani. And when it comes to, you know, a replacement for General Qasem Soleimani, do you know what Allah had saved in his treasures to replace him? It's General Kaani. General Kaani is who replaced General Qasem Soleimani. Although it's a huge blow that we took, and the camp of resistance has taken, and especially the leader of the Muslim Ummah, with the loss of General Qasem Soleimani. But General Kaani, he is a mastermind. He was behind, you know, chalking out this whole plan to destroy ISIS.
And I'd love to talk about that more, and I'm really excited. I want to know more about General Kaani, because I don't know much about him. I don't even know if I pronounced his name right. Kaani. But that's all we have time for today. We hope that you enjoyed and benefited from today's show, inshallah. If you have any questions or queries, or you want to see any of our other content, you can visit pasttoday.com. And we'll see you next time, inshallah. From myself, Sayyid Mahdi, and from Sheikh Ali, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. Please don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Dear friends, and for your information, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, while referring to a verse in the original Evangel, which God has revealed to Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him, has supplicated the Creator of the universe in the following words. O Allah, verily I beseech you by the ayah by whom you commanded your servant Jesus, the son of Mary, peace upon him, to call you. Then you answered him, and he revived the dead, cured the blind and the leper with your permission. And by your revelation, he told of mysteries with your grace, kindness and mercy. Praise be to you, Lord of the heavens and the earth, Lord of the worlds. His is the dominion in the heavens and the earth. He is the magnificent, the wise. Come between us and our enemies and help us against them, O our Master and Lord.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamun Alaikum. So welcome to this program, today's special from IRIB English Radio. On today's special, we're going to speak about conception of death in Islam.
Every time I close my eyes, I see in front of me. I still can hear your voice calling out my name. And I remember all the stories you told me. I miss the time you were around. I miss the time you were around. But I'm so grateful for every moment I spent with you. I know life won't last forever.
First of all, let's see what date is today. Today, Saturday, is the 18th of Jamadi al-Awwal, 1442 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 13th of the month of day, 1399 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 2nd of January 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. At the first step, let's bless this moment of today's special by recitation of chapter Al Imran, verse 185.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. كل نفس ذائقة الموت وإنما توفون أجوركم يوم القيامة فمن زحزح عن النار وأدخل الجنة فقد فاز وما الحياة الدنيا إلا متاع الغرور.
Every soul will taste death, and you will only be given your full compensation on the day of resurrection. So he who is drawn away from the fire and admitted to paradise has attained his desire. And what is the life of this world except the enjoyment of delusion?
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Dear friend, most people are willing to forget their mortality, but this is a reality that even if we forget it, the death will never forget us. The important thing is that the material world and its pleasures do not become the ideal and the final goal of man. Otherwise, using the material world and its merits as a means for attaining the human development not only is not blameworthy, but also is necessary and essential.
I've seen, it's been seen before, but it hurts just like a thorn, a pain I never felt before. My heart said, just speak the truth. My mind said, don't be a fool, I need to get something off my mind. Don't let this silence be misunderstood. I don't know where my heart will take me, but I know your light will protect me from this fragile world.
We continue with conception of death in Islam. Death is an irrefutable fact we can't deny. Time and again, we lose ourselves in this transient world, thinking that we are going to live here forever. As a result, Allah reminds us and shows us signs with the loss of a loved one to show that everything in this world is just temporary. Losing a loved one is undeniably a grief-stricken and devastating moment, especially for the family and close friends. Although according to the Holy Quran, chapter 2, verse 156, that a soul belongs to Allah and will return to Him in time, still it is a painful moment seeing our loved one pass away. Only those people who have experienced it can truly know the depth of pain it brings. When it strikes, it hurts deep down in the core that sometimes you feel numb with emotion. Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
In this episode, we are going to talk about how to get prepared for receiving death. As we know, death is an inevitable experience for all individuals and, broadly speaking, for all living things. We can seldom find a living thing which hasn't received death in its own right. For example, we find that when it becomes autumn or winter, most of plants go into a state of being rather unproductive. And we find that green foliage changes to yellow or dark brown. And this is a sign that its life cycle has reached its annual end. In contrast, for example, you find that with the approach of spring, you find that life comes back, for example, to a tree. With regard to animals, we find that almost the same can be discerned. However, death as such is an inevitable experience. It's believed that everybody believes in the death of other people but regards him or herself to be immortal, I mean, without receiving the experience of death. While it isn't true, everybody is subject to receiving death. On some day in the future. And everybody has experienced the shocking news of receiving the death alert or death news of other people. I mean, whether one's close relatives, associates, acquaintances, friends, and so on.
Death, a beautiful gift for a believer. How? We'll look at it. Reality of departing from the world. Usually most of the people are alarmed and fearful upon hearing the word death. And to them, death appears dreadful and terrifying, whereas according to the Islamic ideology, this terminology or this subject has a different appearance and can be perceived in a different way. Basically, it can be said that those who fear death consider it to be a negative entity. According to this insight, death is an end of life and a moment of everlasting separation of man with his life. Hence, with death, everything ends with no hope remaining. Islam does not possess such a dark and fear-instilling view of death because according to the Islamic view, death is a positive entity. The moment of death is a moment of rebirth of man and a moment of his hastening out from a confined region of this world into a world, which is wide, expansive, and rapturous. A world wherein man is not troubled by anxiety, sorrows, and material and natural limitations.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light, guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in life. But often lies, 'cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
How do we prepare for the journey of death? That's a good question. When one undertakes to travel in the world, there are numerous preparations to be made. The same criteria apply to the transitional journey of death, the only difference being that we must be prepared all day, every day, as the date of travel is not known. Fortunately, the tickets are provided by Almighty and we do not have to bear the cost. Since there is a choice of destinations, the passport and visa requirements vary. For the destination of the pleasure of Almighty, the passport must confirm bay'ah to Almighty, his prophets, and the infallibles. He must also testify to oneness of God, justice, and day of judgment. For the destination of hell, there is no need of a passport at all. The visas for heaven are even more difficult to obtain. Numerous qualifications are required, amongst them truthfulness, patience, prayer, porate or zakah, and etc.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala states within the Holy Quran that we must visit the graveyards and we must see and witness the graveyards on daily basis. Islamic traditions indicate that the graveyard must be placed right in the downtown and in the center of a city. And if you visit the holy city of Najaf, you find that the graveyard is right in the center of the city, and there is a reason behind that. It's not that they just suddenly decided we're going to put the graveyard right in the middle of the city. It is because when we wake up every morning, we're full of energy, we want to start our day, and we go through the downtown of the city and we see the bodies of the deceased enter the graveyard, being prepared to be washed, being prepared to be prayed upon, being prepared for the burial, we remind ourselves that soon this is going to come to our doors. This fate is going to knock at our doors. And we remind ourselves of the akhirah, and we remind ourselves of the hereafter.
I think death is an interesting topic to discuss about, so inshallah we continue on the next episode of today's special. Till then, fi amanillah.
Yourself. Can't you see this wonder spread in front of you?
the clouds floating by, the sky so clear and blue, planets in their orbits, the moon and the sun, such perfect harmony. Let's start questioning ourselves, isn't this proof enough for us?
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.